It's June 28, 2016, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth. And we're coming to you from the Santa Cruz Mountains in Northern California from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional.
But the truth is always naked.
I'm Errol Strider.
And I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider. We welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition and what to make of it, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and always a few surprises.
Our show is sponsored by Go Raw, nutritious and delicious, uncooked, unsullied, or spoiled, fabulous food that you can get at Safeway, Costco, and Whole Foods.
And Universe Spirit, awakening us to the impact of climate destabilization and how we can make a difference.
To get us started, as far as I can tell, our program tonight is about, as far as I can tell. That is the featured phrase of the week. As you may have noticed, there's lots of telling going on, and what is being told is often very telling. How effective is telling? And once you've been told, how can you tell if your message has been received and, even more critical, acted upon, taken to heart, or even retold? It's hard to tell. As far as I can tell, in most conversations, there's lots more telling than listening. At least, that's what goes on in my mind and with most of the people I talk with. As a result, communication starts with telling, and if the message isn't received, can readily escalate to yelling. So, in an effort to ward off the yelling, we'll see if we can tell if telling is the best way to get our point across. In any case, it'll be very telling.
As far as I can tell, it is what it is now. The past has arrived. We are here and brought with us all that we need. Later, when we arrive there, as far as I can tell, we'll take this moment with us as well.
Really? This one here? Why are you going to carry it forward?
We don't have to carry it. That's the wonderful thing about moments. They just come with you. They get incorporated into your being, into your brain, into all your little cells. Whatever's come before this moment is already here.
So, as far as you can tell, these memories are chiseled into our beingness, and the ones that have some worthwhileness to get perpetuated become permanently part of the soul being that we're becoming. Whereas the other ones, the ones that we might think of as inferior and inadequate, unnecessary, ridiculous, and petty, are left behind.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't put so many adjectives on them, because sometimes what we might think of as petty or inadequate might turn out to be just the perfect ones to bring with us.
It may be, but they had a sale on adjectives this week.
You wanted them.
At Kmart.
And you used them.
And by golly.
That was a blue ribbon special or
whatever
it was. You got 10
adjectives for the price of 6.
You are a man after a sale.
I love it. A wonderful sale. There's an adjective that they threw in.
So, here we are, as far as I can tell. The interesting thing about being here is that you don't have to worry so much about what's to come, and what has passed is already done. So why worry about it? Because you can't fix it. It's a lot more unburdensome to be here than there.
As far as I can tell, many, if not most, negative human interaction comes from unresolved past, trying to hold on to itself and get itself resolved in this present moment.
Unresolved in what way?
There was some kind of an abrasive experience that left the person damaged, possibly shamed. Those two, when they get together and they work together, they're like those glues that you've seen where you have two sides of the glue and you put them together, then they stick. So when you have injury and shame, then it sticks to you. And then you are necessarily trying to resolve that discomfort, which is why we are so taken with the present.
As far as I can tell, that happens to a lot of people. But a lot of people don't know that it's happened to them. A lot of people live very much in the present. They don't go back and check all that stuff from the past, even though they are run by it. All that stuff from the past has moved into their engine, and that's what runs them. But there's no way of knowing that unless you become aware.
I hesitate to use the term a lot of people, all people, most people. Some people that I've encountered actually have that. Three people that I've met.
I have a way of deducing when I say most people. All I have to do is pick up a newspaper. It seems that a great many people are not conscious of their actions in terms of the past having hurt them, or things, ideologies hurt them, whatever, that they're acting out of that, but they're not nice. People do mean things to each other.
We can be very cruel to each other, but I'm suspicious of what we read in the newspaper. Not that it's not true, even, whatever amount of it is true.
Well,
it's the fact that it's going to be conflict, because that's what sells and that's what we want to read. So they're going to pick the conflict parts of our experience. That's what they're going to emphasize, because the non-conflict parts are, well, boring from a newspaper entertainment point of view.
Why is that? You know, the human interest stories that end up in media, I find them the most interesting things to read. The things that we do to each other that are conflict-oriented are not as interesting. They're painful. So I want to skip them.
As far as we can tell, from the point of view of Andrew Walter Morgan.
Can't have life without the darkness, and can't have spots without mine. Can't have strength without crooked, and can't have tame without wild. As far as I can tell, from my head to my toe, as far as I can tell, that's the way that it goes. There ain't no up without down. There ain't no pain without pleasure. There ain't no song without a heart. And there ain't no junk without treasure. As far as I can tell, from my head to my toes, I can tell that's the way that it goes. Can't have rough without smooth. Can't have sweet without sour. And you can't have glad without the blues. As far as I can tell, from my head to my toes, as far as I can tell, that's the way that it goes. You can't have order without chaos. You can't have heart without gold. You can't have winning without losing. And you can't have young without old. From my head to my toes, far as I can tell, that's the way that it goes. Hey, you can't have full without an empty, and you can't have short without tall. You can't have easy without difficult, and you can't have rise without fall. Far as I can tell, from my head to my toes, far as I can tell, that's the way that it goes. Oh, side, and there ain't no less without more. As far as I can tell, from my head to my toe, as far as I can tell, it's sweet.
Well, that's as far as Andrew Morgan can tell from his head to his toes. So what I get from that point of view is that you have to have opposites. You can't have rich without poor. You can't have tall without short. That informs me that Andrew, like many of us, can't tell very far. As far as he can tell, that's what it appears. But what we are discovering is that that contrast, that duality, that comparison thing is not necessary. What is not required, that in an early stage of our development, we seem to need those opposites in order to get oriented to life. But then there comes a point in a spiritual perspective, which to me is where you have the capacity to ground yourself in a non-dualistic orientation to life.
One is shaped a lot from the outside as well as the inside. The shaping from the inside is the spiritual connection I have to the highest. And I'm always aware of this at the end of the day when I've been interacting with a lot of people. I feel like people are rubbing off on me. And I want to come home and rub off what's been rubbed on so that I can get back to that place where it isn't dualistic, where it isn't good and bad, where it is, as far as I can tell, it is when I'm in that space. I'm more in an inner space than an outer space.
I'd like to invite Professor Umbridge to comment on that because I know he's got a point of view. What do you think about it? How far can you tell, Professor?
Delighted to be here, of course. As far as I can tell, human beings are only very barely on the journey of life and existence. They're just little tiny tots, you are, all of us, and we only have the barest understanding of anything that's going on. So, as far as I can tell, you're dealing with, as we pointed out on more than one occasion, an immature species fumbling along, trying to make sense of it, and using this oppositional orientation to life to kind of get its bearings. But, as I understand and have had some meager experience, there's a point in which I don't need or require these contrasts to orient myself because I have experienced the welling up of the inner compass that is orienting me toward an ever-expanding, freeing, and simultaneously unifying life experience that I'm having.
I totally understand, empathize, and agree.
Really?
Yes.
But how far into the telling can you take that?
I can take it as far as I can tell. I can't tell any further than I can. That's the interesting thing about this phrase, is that you can only tell as far as you can. You can't tell any further because you have no knowledge of further, and you can't tell anything else other than as far as you can tell.
So you can't jump ahead of yourself?
You can jump ahead of yourself, but it won't be real. You can make it up. You can pretend. You can force feed yourself delusions and pretend they're real.
You know what I like when I force feed myself with delusions? I like a side of confusion. For hors d'oeuvre, I like some disorientation. And then for dessert, I, of course, want something sweet. So the natural thing that follows delusions is justification of my delusions. That is delicious. I think I'll have seconds of those.
You do indeed, because when we're deluded, we want as much of it as we can get. That's the nice thing about delusion. You almost become addicted to it if you eat enough of it.
What does it take to wake up to the reality that we're misguided?
like walking, you have to be ready. If we're evolving beings, evolutionary aspects are there in the brain, in the reptilian brain, and then you move to the higher brain and all that stuff.
I traded in my reptilian brain.
But Michael Howe wrote this wonderful book about it. He gave a talk, which I attended, and I found it so fascinating. And if you think that at any given moment, we can operate from more than one part of our brain, the evolutionary stages of our brain. But what runs us? I'm so aware that even as many times as I feel like the higher part of my brain is running me at certain points, I could just slide right down the scale to the reptilian part of the brain and get so pissed at somebody for doing something that I felt was unjustified and judgmental of me. When I feel judged, as far as I can tell, I become early woman with a big club in my hand and I want to just smash ahead. And that's the way it is. But I am stopped by that higher part of my brain that says, there's no need for this.
And you're stopped because I've already run out the door.
It's not you so much.
I saw the club coming and I decided, no, I don't think so. I think we'll avoid the club. But you talked about different sizes of the brain. Well, one brain that we tend to rely upon a lot.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful. A miracle, our wake was beautiful, magical. And all the birds in the trees, well, they'd be singing so happily. For joyfully, oh, playfully, watching me. But then they sent me away to teach me how to be sensible, logical, all responsible, practical. And then they showed me a world where I could be so dependable, all clinical, all intellectual, cynical.
That was Roger Hodgson wailing away, "Who I Am, Please Tell Me Who I Am." What an interesting song, and well written and well sung. Just the notion that we are sent off to learn to be, as he pointed out, respectable and dependable and all of that, but it doesn't really tell us who we are. It just tells us how to, well, not make waves and get along. Get along, little human, get along. Get along, little human, get along. When something shows up and it gets in your way, well, get along, little human, get along.
You just make that up?
My friend Clem, who periodically takes over my mind.
That is extempore.
Yes. But speaking of extempore, I want to ask Senator Beauregard if he's got some thoughts about this whole thing about adapting to a world that doesn't really show you who you are.
Well, I don't think I can improve much on that, but I'll tell you this, is as far as I can tell, lots of folks are committed to stay ignorant, just stay in a reactive mode instead of a thoughtful mode. And I guess it's because we can get lazy mentally, and it's very demanding to actually grapple with whether or not something is right or wrong, if you want to use that polarity, although I don't recommend it. But if you want to consider whether something is going to work out for you in the way you hope, and that's pretty much what folks is trying to do a good portion of the time. Make sure they don't get hurt and they get enough to eat and enough other pleasures to make it somewhat worthwhile, at least. And that's how I see it, as far as I can see, anyway. That's what is.
And that is the reptilian brain, is that you satisfy your needs. If anybody gets in the way of that satisfaction, you take them out. You're very protective of that which feeds you and comforts you and houses you, keeps you safe.
But I always wondered if the reptiles themselves were insulted by using the reptilian brain in association with some of the most discordant activities of human beings. Their reptilian brain is just what's so and what's natural to them. I do think they get insulted.
I don't think they get insulted for the very reason that you said. It's just natural to them. They're not thinking they're doing anything wrong. That's who they are. That's what makes them dangerous. I mean, they're not going, oh, look at that sweet human. I wouldn't want to eat that person because, I mean, they're so nice and their mother might get all upset and everything. There's no thought intended. They're hungry, they eat. If you're the food, you're the food. We're not given second thoughts. That's what makes a reptilian brain. It's a brain that doesn't sit and figure out and have empathy. It's a brain that satisfies its needs as much as possible, as quickly as possible, without thought.
Hello, this is Rabbi Greenberg, and I would like to talk and put in something for the reptilian brain.
Oh, I don't believe it, but go ahead.
The reptilian brain is a good brain. It got us very far as it got us. We shouldn't ever disparage the reptilian brain. Not that you're disparaging it, but just understanding it. But the other brain, the cultivator one, that's on top of that one, the thinking brain. And don't stop there with the thinking brain. Go on up to the next story. And that's the brain, that's the intuitive brain. That's the brain that senses the whole of it. That brain we use just for the whole of it. As far as I can see, when that brain gets awakened, you're in a better position to guide your life in a direction that's going to be mutually satisfying and maybe even joyful. That's the life that the top brain offers, is a joyful life. The bottom brain gives a pleasurable life. The middle brain gets an understandable life. But the top brain, gives a joyful life.
I like that, and I totally concur. As far as I can tell, I mean, there's other parts that have been wonderfully described by this by Mr. Howe, but I think that in short, and as far as I can tell, what you said is just as edifying to our discussion.
Well, we hope that you're being edified by our conversation. We're looking at, as far as we can tell, and obviously what we're telling you is as far as we've gotten, but we're hoping, as a result of this program, that we, along with you, will have traveled a little farther down the road. So the next time we tell somebody something, we've got a little broader and deeper perspective.
We can say, as far as I can tell, a little bit further down the road.
You could do that. But I want to say something, as I mentioned in our intro, about the very activity of telling. The fact that we love to tell, as long as you don't tell on people. Like criminals, a snitch is the worst thing. They can kill you, they can cut your guts out, but don't be a snitch.
Don't like, tell anybody who did it.
That's right. That's kind of where we are with our cultural mindset. No telling who's doing it.
When it serves us, when it serves our purposes, we go right after telling about somebody because then we come out on top.
I find myself telling things all the time where I come out on top. As I watch myself, just today I said something to somebody which was an ego attempt to exalt myself because, as A Course in Miracles says, the ego transforms situations into forms of praise for itself in order to overcome its doubts. I catch myself doing that all the time, saying something that will make me seem smarter or better or something. And then I stop, though, and I ask, what's the doubt that's still underneath that, that underlies that expanding of yourself, puffing yourself up? By the way, that's one thing I've learned, is that our impulse to get bigger is natural. The ego's way of doing that is to puff us up with fear. The spirit's way of expanding us is to fill us up with love. As far as I can tell.
I know it's true.
Let's see what Del Barber has to say about that. Del Barber, as far as I can tell, we've been set free by her grace. Did you catch that?
I tap my toes, but I can't hear any words. So my mind isn't as engaged as my feelings. A lot of what we get in life is like that. It doesn't engage our mind, but it engages our feelings.
Or vice versa.
Or it engages our mind, but not our feelings.
That's when we have the opportunity to see if we can live a kind of life where my mind and my feelings are both playing in the same arena, so they're both getting off on it.
Can they get off on it at the same time? I feel something, and then I have a real strong need to understand what I felt. So I will immediately engage my mind. Then, the other way around, for a lot of people, as their mind is engaged, and they might go, what was that? Then they feel something because their mind was engaged. But does it happen simultaneously? Is there a simultaneity to the engagement of mind and feelings?
On Wednesdays.
And here I was thinking it was Fridays.
Yeah, see, today's Tuesday, and so as you listeners may have noticed, our mind and our feelings are off on different journeys.
I have a strong need to always understand what I'm feeling. Not enough for me to just have a feeling. I have to understand the feeling.
That's the detective curious psychologist that lives inside you.
Absolutely. I have such a need to do that. Without it, there's an emptiness. There's something missing. Ooh, I want to know so badly.
The knowing gives what you're experiencing meaning. The knowing is a way to connect what you're feeling, to something that's actually valuable, substantive, purposeful. That's a good way of purpose, as well as how can it be used to further who you are and how you're choosing to live your life.
I'll buy that.
The mind is an integrating dimension that exists between matter and spirit, according to some teachings. So we need to be conscious when we use our mind that we're pulling together these aspects of reality that in truth aren't really separate. But out here in the phenomenal world, where things appear separate, we get to play the game of integrating what is apparently not separate. It's kind of like the way God allows himself to be surprised through us, shutting down the all-knowing mechanism. Just have partial knowing so that through us, the all-knowing God gets to discover everything all over again, brand new.
It's the way I experience being with my granddaughter at this point. I get to experience things through her eyes, the way she will actually really engage so fully in something. She'll study it, look at it before she gets into it. And other things, because she has already done them, she goes running around banging on them and doing things. But that total engagement seems to happen only with something new.
What can you tell so far about?
As far as I can tell, this is the way we learn. We're introduced to things, we get totally into them, we get to know what they are, and then we go on to something else. Later in life, we can go back to those things, those first experiences, anew, and bring with it a great deal more understanding as more mature beings. As far as I can tell, I'd like to think that.
I want to applaud that. And while we're applauding that, I want to give thanks to GoRaw and Universe Spirit. Their website is Job One for Humanity. GoRaw and Universe Spirit are two examples of an organized entity, a group of people trying to bring forth something that is more nutritious and delicious and substantive. And in the case of Job One for Humanity, to put a brake on the ways in which we are poisoning ourselves and our environment so that we can bring about a healthy orientation and way of living our lives on this planet.
You just said something, poisoning ourselves and our environment. That's why it's so difficult to get people to act. I mean, the majority of people, is because there's a separation between ourselves and our environment. There's me, there's the environment. Well, it's over there. Until it starts banging into me, it doesn't affect me. To realize that I am constantly affecting the environment and the environment is constantly affecting me. So there is a union between us. Till that reality sinks into our consciousness, we don't do anything.
Wasn't it Yeshua, Jesus, that said, I and the environment are one?
I haven't read that anywhere. As far as I can tell, what comes out of your mouth is your thing.
I would think that's what he would say. What is the environment, really? It's evolution. It's this dynamic process that's going on. We are popped into a particular place on this little planet where we get to participate in this thing. But the environment isn't just like the physical environment of our globe. It's the mental, moral, transcendent context in which life is experienced. Right, Professor Schnitzel?
Oh, yeah. The environment is totally expansive. Don't forget, it goes inside and outside, and it's just as never-ending inside as it is outside. So the environment, curiously enough, when you realize, is this never-ending phenomenon called infinity, with which we are a little tiny little drop in it, finding our way, I like to use that word, into some level of awareness and knowing, at least as far as I can tell. What I'm hoping is that I will get further along and be able to tell more. Then once I'm past that point, the things I would have said when I was further along and I was telling myself will seem of no significance, because I will have passed that further along stage and gone to another further along stage in which the telling of the first stage seemed inconsequential as relationship to the telling of the stage that I'm in, but which I'm leaving because I'm ready to catch another stage.
As far as I can tell, how long can he tell that? Can he keep going and going and go to the next stage and the next stage until the stages all coalesce into one big stage and then he is that stage by himself?
The thing that's enabled me to be able to go on these stages like this is I needed instruction, so I hired a stage coach. Comes to my house once a week and gives me lessons and coaches me on how to move from stage to stage. The main thing he tells me is that don't get fixated to attach to the stage you're in. It's just a passing stage of life.
I'm so aware of that. I read this thing that Helen Mirren quoted in some magazine that I was looking at. She just turned 70. The 70s are great, by the way. And if you're not there yet,
wait.
Look forward to it. But the acceptance and the getting totally into where you are is what came out of my understanding of that article. People are always going, oh, I wish I weren't this, and I wish I weren't that, and I wish I were younger.
Are those that same group of people that
the you same group of people, all
before.
Those people. I may exaggerate somewhat or generalize, but I enjoy it, so but, forget about
but
it.
But you generalize in a not very private way.
That's right. I like to generalize in a big way.
Public way.
But let me talk about what I was saying. What was I saying? I can't remember now.
While you're thinking about it, I want to quote Archibald MacLeish, who is a writer, poet, who said when he was in his 80s, my best decade is my 80s.
The best decade is the one you're in. It's the same thing that we talked about in the very beginning when I said that we are, as we stand here, all the past is in us. So the present is the accumulation of the past. And the future's not gotten there yet. But when we get to the future, we'll bring this moment with it as well. If we can remember that, there's no way we can be upset where we are. It's just too filled with everything. It's marvelous.
And if you're confused by it and don't understand it, don't worry about it, because it will all make sense at the end.
I'd like to do some calculations in the hopes that'll come to some realizations. My mind is not what it used to be. That certainly isn't news to me. But I want to know how
spent. Now that I am near the end, so I'll add, subtract, multiply, and divide, and I'll try and figure out what I did with my life. I spent 27 years in my bed, and there's not much that I would have preferred to do instead. I spent 2 years chewing, 6 months wooing, and I'm sure you're curious, almost 3 years pooing. I spent 45 years working for a guy that I wanted to kill when I didn't want to die. But I spent 57 years loving you, my friend, so I guess it all makes sense at the end. I spent nearly a full year masturbating, second only to the one we spent copulating. I know you're not a fan of this vulgarity, but completeness is important for full clarity. I spent more than 7 years watching television, and how could I not regret that decision? But I don't think that I'll ever know how much time I did or didn't spend looking into your eyes. I've never known anyway but numbers and sums to understand what we are and what we have become. But like numbers are perfect, that's how this has been for me, and I hope that I still give you everything you need. 80 years alive and 4 eating food, 5 reading books and 57 with you. 2 eyes, 1 nose, 1 smile, 1 life. It somehow isn't ever quite enough time. I spent 27 years in my bed, and there's not much that I would have preferred to do. Instead I spent 2 years chewing and 6 months wooing, and I'm sure you can.
That was funny. Yes.
It all makes sense at the end. Added up the amount of time spent doing all those things. The he that I'm referring to is Hank Green. He spent 1 year pooing, but that was funny, and X number of years copulating, and 27 years in his bed, and he was okay with that. It is funny, but at the end, what does he look back on? He looks back on those times he spent, whomever he spent 57 years with in his life that he loved. And here we are, like 40 years. We have a little flyer we hand people, and I was looking at it the other day. I didn't like the line that opened it, because the line was, there's a sale at
no,
Walgreens.
There was not.
Right. It was something else that my brain was thinking about. Whatever the line was. So we came up with a few lines, and I passed them by Rochelle, and the one she picked was, together for 40 years, and we're still talking.
And especially on this program, we get to talk to each other with no distractions.
I wouldn't say no distractions. By my nature, I'm distracted.
But for 1 hour, you have to pay attention to us talking to each other.
And you are?
Lydia.
Hello, Lydia. You are so cute. Do you not think she's cute, Father O'Malley? Cute, Rochelle? You're such a darling cuteness. As
Thank
a matter
you,
of
Father
fact,
O'Malley.
When they passed out the cuteness, they gave you an extra dollop of cuteness.
Oh.
Because you just radiate the cuteness. Here you are now, not so much a young woman anymore, but I understand that you were drawn the looks and the glances of some of the fellows they had here this last weekend. What they call it, the burners. The people who go to the Burning Man. Never been to the Burning Man. I'm not sure I quite understand it. But anyway, they go to this Burning Man and they burn up the man, I guess, and then they come and, what they call it, decompress it. And Rochelle was here, and this was the pre-burning man, of course. They were eyeing you up and down, and I was so proud of that. Here you are, having this wonderful experience. Of course, I had to hit a couple of them over the head, but that's what I do.
Oh, Father O'Malley, you didn't have to do anything like that. I was not aware of that at all.
Oh, well, there, you're not watching like I am. Keep an eye on you, dear.
I like the man of the cloth taking care of me. Especially in a nudist place, a man in the club.
Well, that's good, my dear. The man in the cloth in a nudist place. I like that. I have to tell that to some of my cronies.
Okay. I'm still laughing about it.
But I wanted to say there, as a man of the cloth, that when you are able to radiate like you do there, and I can see the very spirit of life just radiating out of you. Of course, it doesn't radiate quite as effectively when you got the club in your hand. But there is radiation going on there, darling, in spite of it. It may not be the glowing, beautiful purple radiation, but it's definitely projecting that point of view.
Okay.
But I'm glad to be here, and as far as I can tell, the humans are doing just what they need to do at the time they need to do it. And each one of them, us, will find the next step as it goes. The universe is a very forgiving place. Gives you lots of room to mess up and make mistakes. And they're kind of rooting for you that you catch your mistakes, darling, and that you actually learn from them and maybe do some unlearning. At least, that's as far as I can tell.
When I'm with my granddaughter and I'm watching her and enjoying her, not just because of her, but because we all started like that. And there's this marvelous awareness when I'm with her that this is the way we begin. And somehow or other, we bring something to the table from somewhere else. I'm not sure where. Maybe it's genetic. Maybe it's ethereal. I have no idea, but when she stares at me and just looks at me, I feel there's something going on that she's not aware of, that I'm aware of, that has greater depth. And maybe one day she will be aware of it. Hopefully it won't scare her.
Sometimes it's called being an old soul. I went up to a guy the other day and I said to him, you know, you're an old soul. Well, he was insulted. He thought I was calling him old. He even wanted to take a club to me.
No.
Yeah, he was insulted.
I didn't even know about that.
Don't call me an old soul. I'm young and all of that.
Really and truly this happened?
No, not really.
Oh, God. He sucks me in. I follow him and go, oh, yeah, that's true. Wink, something, pull your ear when you're making up something so I don't get sucked in. I can enjoy the story.
Okay.
But I don't want to get sucked into it as true.
Love it when you get sucked in.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. What's not to like? Seeing you being sucked in.
Oh, God.
It makes me want to just go tell it from the mountain because it needs to be told.
Oh, tell it on the mountain, over the hill, and everywhere. Oh, tell it on the mountain, to let my people go. Who's that yonder dressed in red? Let my people go. Must be the children that Moses led. Let my go. Who's that yonder dressed in red? Must be the children that Moses led. Go tell it on the mountain to let my people go. Go tell it on the mountain, over the hill and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain.
After we finish this program, I'll be going over the hill, Rochelle, and everywhere.
to tell it, just like Peter, Paul, and Mary told us to tell it. And it is good news, and we do tell it. And that's a lot of what this program is about. We want to tell you that it can get better and better. One of the things I learn, and I practice it, expect a blessing. It's way better than worrying. Way better.
I've been told that. I haven't quite gotten it.
You're still working on you.
I was the great female worrier at one time. Remember me?
What do you mean, remember? Remember what, an hour ago?
But remember what I said about worrying. You worry because if you worry enough, it won't happen. If you worry and what you worry about is so much far worse that whatever happens can't be as bad as what you worried about it. And the other thing is you worry because it's your duty.
We are not doing this out of duty. We are doing this because it is a joyful experience. And I hope you feel the joy, listener. This is Inside Out, the Naked Truth.
And it is joyful. I love it.
We are sponsored by Go Raw, Natural Foods, Healthy, and Universe Spirit. And we do have a crisis. We are experiencing it. Of course, we've always experienced some degree of the ups and downs and the gyrations of Mother Nature as it shows up in floods and fires.
I thought if something was very funny that Iceland, which is becoming denuded of its ice, is already starting to figure out wonderful ways to get people over there to visit because it won't be so icy.
Right. They're building hotels now. Yes. Getting ready for the rush.
Man's ingenuity, human's ingenuity, is never ending. It's the reason I have more faith in humans than most people do, because I believe that when we get into crunch, we do our best to get out of it.
Speaking of crunch, it's time for us to let you go. Come join us again, Inside Out, The Naked Truth. Let us hear from you at estrider@gmail.com. So, Rochelle, what do we need to remember?
We need to remember that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
And as far as I can tell, that's the truth.
Yeah, as far as I can tell. Yeah, pretty much.